Good morning. The heat waves certainly lifted the heart this week, and thousands took to the mountains and the sea for some awe and awe. Brenda Donoghue caught up with some swimmers at the surf dock in Ringsend in Dublin.
Hi, what's your name, lads?
Dennis.
Michael.
Where are you from, lads?
Hershey.
What age are you?
14.
12.
Now, you have fabulous wetsuits on. Talk me through them.
The wetsuits. You keep you warm, you can float in the water.
How high do you jump, guys?
Very high. We jump off all these buildings around here.
I mean, there's the waterways building, that's about 30 feet, but you don't do any higher than that, do you?
That big building over there.
The old Bowling Flour Mills building?
Yeah.
Are you boasting now or are you serious?
No, I'm serious.
Did you ever get in trouble, Michael, for jumping off the 30-foot high waterways building?
Yeah, by the police, just telling people to leave and some people are getting arrested over it.
And would that stop you?
Not really. Everyone must be up there.
Does it feel good, Michael?
Yeah, feels great.
Dennis is making a run for it and he's gone. Ah! Oh. Was that good, Dennis?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, Dennis, this puts your day in for you, does it?
Yeah, it's better than getting trouble in the flats.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of trouble?
Just messing around the flats, like.
Keeps you out of there.
Keeps you out and enjoyment.
Well, Michael and Dennis, lovely to meet you. You're dripping wet, so stay away from me. Have a great summer.
Yeah, same to you. Right, Michael, let's jump.
Yeah!
Sounds too scary by half, and there have been warnings all week about safety on the water in the wake of tragic drownings. On Morning Ireland, the chief executive of Irish Water Safety, John Leach, urged parents not to leave children unsupervised.
We just have to make the point, supervision is absolutely crucial when it comes to water. I mean, children, all of us love water, but children particularly, they're attracted to it. If you take your eye off a child for literally seconds, they'll be in the water, and regrettably, children drown in seconds. And it's a silent business, drowning. A lot of people think it's a noise business. It's not. It's a silent one. If you don't hear noise, you don't hear noise from your children, there's something going wrong. So really, stay on top of your supervision with your children.
John Leach. Well, the blazing sunshine even penetrated the shadowy depths of the Morning Ireland studio, playing mischievous tricks with Rachel English's normally flawless delivery.
And at 86.1 pence sterling this morning.
Thank you, Connor. Next, the bitch you've all been waiting for, Joanna Donnelly, joins us from Met Erin.
That's a great introduction. Well, I've good news anyway. No change, and today will be dry, hot and sunny across the country.
Oh, the perils of live radio. And good on you, Joanna Donnelly, a very quick recovery. For taxi driver Wayne Carney, the heat was a chance for him to dance in the street. His routine has now gone viral. Hundreds of thousands of people watched him dance with a young woman on the internet. They've tweeted, retweeted, liked it, and it was picked up by the gathering because, as they said, in Ireland you can expect the unexpected.
So I just turned off Georgia Street into that street, and there was just a sea of people, Miriam. I drove up and this girl started dancing in front of the car, and I decided to join her on request.
And you didn't need much persuasion, Wayne, when you look at the clip.
Well, look, listen, Miriam, look, can I not be just left alone to dance in the street? Seriously?
Mary-Louise O'Donnell went jiving and twisting the night away at the Ballroom of Romance in Granard in County Longford.
People think everything happens in Dublin. It doesn't. Much happens outside the pale we know nothing of. The music and the rhythm and the dancing and the jiving. It didn't matter whether you were married, divorced, single, a bachelor. It was a lovely floor, huge big marquee, marvellous bar. You could have tea and a sandwich as well. They came in summer dresses, blouses, summer jackets, coloured skirts, hair done, great figures, the women in the slingback shoes, good legs, big women, small women, tall women, thin women, all light on their feet. And there was jiving and waltzing and twisting and turning. I was sitting there and I thought I was getting the exercise just watching. Some of the couples, of course, had danced together for years and knew every turn of each other. And some of them were dancing as one, and there had a great sense of timing. And they went round and round the floor. And you know the way older people dance? They either walk dancing or trot dancing or glide dancing or dance as if they're pushing a wheelbarrow in front of them or wrap around dancing or fellas with their arms up around the women's necks as they're going round the floor. They had a way and a method.
And were they talking to each other?
All talking and laughing. And there was a fella got up to dance at 10 o'clock. He was still dancing at 10 to 1. And their age would defy you. And what I fascinated always about country men dancing is the big, strong, sun-kissed arms. Big, muscly, strong-kissed arms they'd move mountains with.
Easy tiger. Mary Louise O'Donnell with Pat Kenny. Radio na Gaeltachta's Sean Bon Branagh has been broadcasting live from the Willie Clancy Summer School in Milltown, Malbay, all week, but took time out to take a dip in the sea at Spanish Point, as he told Damien O'Reilly on Liveline.
SBB in a he, Sean Bon Branagh, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Damien.
What were you up to yesterday?
I went for a swim in Spanish Point. I've been going to Spanish Point and that beach for 36 years now. I've been swimming at that beach. And I know that the right-hand side was always kind of dodgy, you know, with rip currents and all that. But I threw off my glasses in for a swim. And I wasn't far out at all. I mean, they say always swim in, but you have to go out to swim in. So I was out a bit and I heard whistling and I didn't realise it was the lifeguards who were trying to whistle me back, because on my left-hand side there was massive waves and all the people, I mean, I love massive waves too. And I did observe then, I said, oh, maybe there's something wrong here. There's nobody swimming in the middle. And there was an area of 50 yards and I was the only person there. So when I turned around then I saw the two lifeguards. I wasn't far out. I was swimming in, but they shouted out, are you in difficulty? And I said, I'm going to swim in. No, they said, you're not swimming in because you're bobbing up and down and there's a rip current there and it's very, very hard. It's impossible to swim. You could be taken out any second, you know, the way the tide goes. Mm. So actually they said, well, I said, no, you're not swimming in. So I said, you'll be able to walk in about 5 yards time. So they threw me a rope with the wooden handle. I grabbed the rope and that's it for about 4 or 5 yards. And I walked in the rest, but I wasn't panicking really. I didn't think I was in trouble, but it didn't take long for the lads to observe that. Now, seemingly, the largest number of incidents in one location on that beach happened on Monday. There's a good few people in trouble there. And funny, I was swimming there today, exactly the same place, and there's no rip current today. You can swim anywhere on that beautiful beach in Spanish Point today.
Sean Bon Branagh. But happy days for these young children who are making a home for a crab they found on the strand at Donabate.
Hi!
Why is everybody gathered around this little water pool here on the beach? What's your name?
Luca. We're digging a few holes and then I connect them together and stuff like that.
What have you got in your book?
A little crab. I'll show you him here.
Yeah, show me.
Where's he going to?
Oh, Rosie, you have a little bucket with shells. Anna?
Crab.
Oh, he's lovely. Have you named the crab?
Crabby.
So what are you going to do with the crab? What are you doing?
We're going to, put more stones in it and put water in it and make a home for him.
And then when we're going home, we're going to release him back into the sea. He pinches a tiny bit sometimes, but it just feels like a little scratch, sort of. And he camouflages into the sand, so it's a bit hard to find him and see him.
When we were making the home, we had to take him out because we were afraid if we put a stone on him, we would kill him.
Are you having a great day?
Yeah.
What's the best thing so far about being out on the beach?
The sun
and the water.
Yeah, water and sun.
Yeah, water and sun.
Everything.
I enjoyed everything at the beach.
Okay, goodbye, little crabby, and everybody have a great day. Bye bye.
Brenda Donoghue reporting there for the Shea Byrne Show. Well, for farmers, it's the perfect weather for saving the hay. Aisling Kenny caught up with Wicklow farmer James Hill.
We're giving the hay its last turn. It's just about ready to bale. As the old men will say, you can hear it rattle. And that's what you must have for proper hay making. It's warm, it's dry. You can hear the hay rustle. That's ready to bale. There is no prospect of rain. The dew will come tonight, but it will flash off tomorrow morning. We shall rake up this hay, bale it, and then it's safe then, and it's available for the livestock then for the winter. And I say we need it because we've had a very difficult almost 2 years at this point.
Wicklow farmer James Hill. Well, as we know, artistic inspiration can strike at any time, but who knew that Oscar-winning songwriter Glenn Hansard was obsessed with the sea area forecast?
It's funny how song titles come to you sometimes, but the sea area forecast is something like, you know, there's parts of the radio, there's parts of Irish, the RTE Radio 1, that I still find absolutely mystical. The sea area forecast being one of them. Just this strange bunch of figures and then these strange words that means so much to some people, but I've never quite understand, you know, Tusker Lighthouse. You know, I mean, I'm gonna get it totally wrong, but like
Mizzenhead to Malahide.
Mizzenhead to Malahide is like 71, rising slowly or falling slowly, which was what actually tweaked my. I remember thinking, what a lovely term, falling slowly, and I knew it had something to do with pressure and air pressure and the ocean and all the rest. And I just thought, what a lovely thought. And so I took the term falling slowly, and it was just knocking around my head. And when I was writing that song, I found that term spilling out of my mouth. And somehow it made total sense to the song. So yeah, Falling Slowly is named after the Sierra forecast.
Who would have known? It's so cool.
So what happens when you put the Sierra forecast and Falling Slowly together? Gerald Fleming was on hand on Friday's John Murray Show with Miriam to reprise this weekend's forecast.
Fair in places, but some mist, fog and drizzle will develop at times today, especially in the northwest. Visibility poor in any mist, fog or drizzle, but otherwise moderate to good. Forecast for coasts from Fairhead to Cairnsore Point to Valentia and for the Irish Sea. Variable force 2 or 3, becoming mainly northerly on Friday night. The weather, mostly fair, with risk of some sea hot fog or haze. With visibility, moderate or good.
I don't know you, but I want you all the words fall through me and always fool me, and I can't react. And games that never amount to more than they're meant will play themselves out.
Glenn Hansard, and we'll have another song from Glenn later. Well, it's another big sporting weekend, but many are still celebrating last weekend with the results of the hurling, the rugby, the tennis, the cycling and the women's boxing. Darren Frehel was beside himself on Monday's Morning Ireland.
Incredible sporting weekend. Dublin, the Leinster hurling champions, first time since 1961. Kerry won the Munster football championship at the weekend. Kilkenny, of course, beating Tipperary at Nolan Park on Saturday night. That's all the Gaelic game stuff. Dan Martin becoming the first Irishman in 21 years to win a stage on the Tour de France following his victory on stage 9 yesterday. Andy Murray claimed his first Wimbledon title following a straight sets victory over Novak Djokovic. Gray McDowell won the French Open in Paris, and of course the British and Irish lines claiming the series against Australia. And then of course we had the 15 medal haul for the Irish women in the boxing. Katie Taylor of course leading the charge there.
And for those of you who missed all the action on radio and television, here's a treat.
And the referee has blown the full time whistle, and the British and Irish lines have come back from the heartbreaking disappointment of defeat last week to absolutely blast apart Australia.
Tipperary are out of the championship. The All-Ireland champions, Kilkenny, have once again proven their mettle, proven their magnificence, proven that when you've got it, the X Factor, you've got it.
Missing the cut of the Irish Open was motivation for me. I've always believed that I could do something on this golf course. I'm very proud, I have to say. I'm a proud French Open winner.
Famous old centre court could be about to go crazy. Murray serves. Here it is. Forehand from Murray. Backhand from Djokovic. Yes! Murray's the Wimbledon champion. It seems ludicrous to say it.
6-4, 7-5.
But a British man has just won Wimbledon.
When it all comes to an end.
to pounce. The crowd know that this is the moment for them. 4 hours, 42 minutes and more in the saddle. But he wants to take it on too early, and Dan Martin goes for it now. And Fulsang grits his teeth and bends it onto his wheel. 150 metres. Has he made it absolutely perfectly? He opens up and tries to drive away. And Fulsang tries to get back at him. Dan Martin holds on. Is it going to be another glory day for Ireland? Absolutely.
For 2013 and 1961, Eamon de Valera was president, Sean Lamass was Taoiseach, and John F. Kennedy was in the White House. The world has changed in 52 years, but today, in front of our eyes in Croke Park, the hurling world has changed.
From Monday's Morning Ireland.
Playback on RTE Radio 1 with Marion Richardson.
Well, whatever about the temperature outside, inside Leinster House on Wednesday it was fever pitch as the final stage of the vote on the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill was debated. As you know, it's been a controversial and divisive campaign, and it was just like the old days, with all-night vigils, pro-life and pro-choice campaigners chanting and singing hymns and protest songs. Justin McCarthy was outside the gates of Leinster House with campaigners on Wednesday night and into the early hours of Thursday morning.
Choice! Choice! Choice!
I'm really angry with the fact that we don't have legal abortion in Ireland yet.
This bill is a very bad bill. We want to protect our unborn babies and the mothers from this savage brutality.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee.
Blessed at times during the evening, there was tension between the two groups, and at one point Gardaí stepped in to divide them when two protesters from the pro-life side of the demonstration attempted to splash holy water on the pro-choice campaigners.
She's splashing holy water, and I am too, because this is a spiritual battle. We can't see it, but it's a battle of consciences, truly, and it's a battle of good and evil, and a battle of devils and angels.
Justin McCarthy reporting. Well, there were marathon sittings of the House, one all-nighter and two long days, with 165 proposed amendments to work through. And for Fine Gael, it was particularly tense, with four men overboard already, and all eyes on Junior Minister for European Affairs, Lucinda Creighton, who'd made no secret of her opposition to the suicide clause in the bill. Well, shortly before 9 o'clock on Thursday night, she voted against her own government, bringing to an end, for now anyway, a glittering career as Junior Minister for Europe and immediate expulsion from the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party. So what now for the woman who was once tipped for the top? She spoke with Justin McCarthy.
I feel very sad. I mean, I'm very sad that I no longer will be a member of the Parliamentary Party of Fine Gael, the party that I've been in since I was 18. So I'm very sad. But at the same time, I feel a bit relieved, because this is obviously a huge issue that's been weighing on everybody's minds for months and months and months.
You had a word with the Taoiseach on the way out. What did you say to each other?
I wished him luck. I've worked in his department for the last 2 years and nearly 2.5 years, and we've had a great relationship. I have the height of admiration for him and how he conducts his business. I've been very privileged to perform my functions and my duties as Minister for European Affairs over the last 2 years and more, and it's very sad for me that that's over.
Lucinda Creighton. Well, I won't go into the shenanigans over Lapland when one deputy was caught on camera pulling a female colleague onto his lap in the Dáil chamber, or the error made by a Labour deputy when in his confusion he accidentally voted the wrong way against his party. Let's just say that the debate even took its toll on an exhausted Ciarán Cóirlí Seán Barrett. Conor McMorrow was monitoring proceedings.
The government chief whip, Paul Keogh, came into the chamber at midnight and sought that the Dáil would sit no later than 1 a.m. The mammoth debate was taking its toll on a clearly tired Ciarán Cóirlí.
Sinéad Mhuilleadh it's getting late. The question is agreed and the amendment is defeated. Vote all.
Shortly after 12:10 a.m, the debate had finally made its way through the 165 proposed amendments. The final vote that the bill would now pass was called. And at 12:26 a.m, Ciarán Cóirlí Seán Barrett declared the final vote.
127, Neil 31. The bill is passed.
Conor McMorrow reporting for yesterday's Morning Ireland. So the Dáil has voted to legislate for abortion when a woman's life is at risk. That bill will now go to the Seanad for approval before it can be signed into law by President Higgins. Well, Galway is on fete this weekend with the Galway Film Fla coming to an end, a great working and meeting place for our most talented filmmakers. And on Monday, the Galway Arts Festival kicks off with 2 weeks of world-class theatre, art exhibitions, trapeze artists, brilliant music and, of course, fun, curated by the artistic director Paul Fahey. Mick Flannery will be joining artists like Glenn Hansard, Grizzly Bear, The Stripes, Josh Ritter and Damien Dempsey in the festival Big Top. He sang live for Sean Rocks on Wednesday night's arena and this song is called Boston.
In Boston town, the leaves are golden brown. We take the kids to town to see the fair. The big wheel is turning round. We hear that homely sound. We're walking through the crowd in the evening air. See our boy hold his sister near until they're in the clear. And you whisper in my ear that one is going to heaven. And you've no idea, do you, what I'd do for you. To have so much to lose is the only feeling. I stood in every line. I couldn't stop my mind from dreaming of you. When I laid eyes on you, I knew that race was through. And when I spoke to you, I told it so. You said, I think that you're a fool. And I said, I know you do, but I'd run away with you if you ask me nicely. You've no idea, do you, what I'd do for you. To have so much to lose is the only feeling. You've no idea, do you, what I'd do for you. To have so much to lose is the only feeling. '50 Boston town, the sun is sitting down. It's the only feeling now.
Mick Flannery, just one of many fine musicians who'll be performing at the Galway Arts Festival over the next fortnight. Ireland's Ombudsman, Emily O'Reilly, has just been appointed EU Ombudsman, the first woman to hold that post, so she's moving to Strasbourg in October. Emily is now a mother of five, and she discussed the society we live in, the price of success, juggling work and family, and of course guilt, with mother of eight, Miriam O'Callaghan.
In a way, I had to park all of those minor details, like what am I going to do with the children and my husband and all of that, because I knew that when I started that I just had to concentrate fully on the campaign. I had to give it everything. And as well, I mean, if you start thinking about logistical details like family and schools,
you'd never do anything.
No, you'd never do anything. And also, there would be a sort of an assumption in your own head that you were going to win. And I never allowed my brain to think that way because I just had to keep on plugging away at the campaign.
It's interesting, though, the way you said maybe it's as a woman more so than a man that one thinks about that. I mean, why is that? It's not that men are less good parents. But like, if someone goes as an EU commissioner, you rarely hear them or even talking about the fact I had to think about.
Well, it's funny. I think the first two people who interviewed me immediately after the election were both women. And both of them, I mean, they were like, it was almost like listening to my mother, you know, were saying, what about the children, you know? So I think there's a kind of an expectation as well. And in fact, I rang my mum about 20 seconds after I'd heard, because I didn't actually go into the parliament because I'm a big coward, really. And so I was sitting outside and I rang mum immediately. Mum said, of course, congratulations and well done. And then immediately she said, now, Emily, are you really happy about this? You know? So everything was in that sentence, you know.
Having such a successful career, an award-winning political journalist and then ombudsman, meant smashing the glass ceiling not once, but many times.
Every woman views that old, you know, working at home, working outside the home argument from the standpoint of where she is. You know, you in your situation will justify your decisions to do what you're doing. I, in my situation, will justify what I'm doing. And, you know, our children will pay the price, Miriam, but there you go.
But I always think we shouldn't have to justify it because men don't.
Well, yeah, I know, you know, but the lived reality is that we end up doing it. And we probably do it to ourselves as well, you know. Mm. Now, I have to say, you know, I left school in 1975, incredibly young, obviously. But I never for a moment considered that I wouldn't have a career. I never even thought about it.
During her tenure as Ireland's ombudsman, Emily was critical of the excesses of the Celtic Tiger and the decline in values. And in one memorable speech, she encouraged people to tiptoe back to the church. So where are we now on the moral spectrum?
Well, I mean, you know, the old physics equation, to every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, you know. So when the crash happened, we all started sort of beating our breasts and saying, Merton, we're terrible. And a period of intense navel-gazing about how we became what we are, and a lot of people patting themselves on the back now because we've changed. And I know President Higgins reflected last week that, you know, the Anglo culture didn't reflect Irish culture. It certainly doesn't now. I'm not convinced yet. I think it takes a long time for a culture to leach out of a society. I notice people are getting excitable again about the property market, for example. I think we need, Miriam, to keep an eye on the handbag buying and BTs, because that to me is the real marker of what's going on. I mean, I think if people get money again, a lot of, you know, the lessons we think we've learned, I think they'll be thrown out of the window.
Emily O'Reilly heard on the John Murray Show with Miriam. Marie Colvin was a celebrated war reporter for the Sunday Times. She was killed in a rocket attack in the besieged city of Homs in Syria last year. The photographer, Paul Conroy, a former British soldier and a friend of Marie's, was working with her when she lost her life. He's just written a book called Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's Final Assignment.
Yeah, she once told a foreign editor when he asked why she and two female Dutch journalists were the only reporters who were let into a refugee camp in East Timor, which was besieged by a government force. What did she say? I suppose they just don't make men like they used to.
That's right, yeah. The poor editor. I mean, she was a storyteller of the highest degree, but she would not give in. She was tenacious, extremely focused. Many times she was left behind and the last person there, and that was typical Marie. She would not abandon a story on the notion that it's getting too much, too dangerous. You know, while there were people there, the women, the children suffering the effects of war, Marie would not back out. She would push for the final story and leave no stone unturned, really.
But also save lives. I mean, in East Timor, she was stubborn in her refusal to abandon refugees and who were being hunted by the Indonesian authorities. And
she was negotiating, you know, to get these people out, and she stuck with them and saw them through, you know, terrible, terrible events to get them out.
Paul Conroy said he had a real sense of foreboding going into Homs, a place other war reporters considered too dangerous. But Marie was determined to go in. On the morning of February 22nd last year, the building they'd been hiding out in took direct hits.
The first shell hit the room that we'd been sleeping in, destroyed the room. So that was the first strike on the house. And at that point, somebody was shouting, out, out, out. And I was thinking, actually, unless we take a direct hit in this room, any wall or any cover is good. So I was shouting, don't get out. I ran into the back room to grab a camera bag I'd left in there, came back in, and as I ran through, another direct hit took a part of the top of the building out, or part of a side wall. Got back into the main room where by now it was carnage. You know, there was black, thick smoke. There was concrete everywhere. Ceilings were coming in. We took another hit. At which point I thought it was over. I thought three rockets in one building was plenty. And I reached down for my camera bag, my camera that I'd dropped. And as I bent down, there was just an almighty explosion, which is the one that killed Marie and Remy. And I got caught in that blast too.
You were offered to be taken out by the Red Cross. You didn't trust them.
What happened is we were told the International Red Cross were coming. And then when it arrived, it was actually the Red Syrian Red Crescent, which the Free Syrian Army said, you know, this could well be a trap, and the activists there. Eventually, the head of the delegation, after much arguing and debating as whether to get in these ambulances, he turned around and said, do not get in my ambulance. I've been ordered by my government to give you over to the security services. And then another one of the Red Crescent came in and said, actually, the plan is to get you in a Red Crescent ambulance and they're going to execute you and pass your bodies onto the battlefield and claim that it was an FSA ambush. So we just could not get in them ambulances, which caused a lot of consternation for people who didn't know the situation at the time in England. But yeah, we knew what was about to happen to us. And I mean, I had a hole through my leg. I got my arm through my leg. So I couldn't do anything but sit there. But we were told that they were specifically were a trap to get us in and to get us killed. I think because we'd seen too much and we'd filmed too much.
Witnesses to war crimes, basically.
Absolutely. And, you know, they didn't want us out of that place.
Paul Conroy with Pat Kenny on Thursday. Dubliners Cathy Davis and Katrina Dowling met and fell in love on a climbing expedition in the Himalayas. They married last year and have three adopted children. But for 6 years, Cathy has been fighting for the right to live in the United States with Katrina, who's a US citizen, and their children. She's just made history by becoming the first woman to get her green card as a result of a same-sex marriage when the Supreme Court struck down DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. But as they told Miriam O'Callaghan, it's been a nightmare experience trying to keep their family together over the years, especially when Cathy's work visa extension was refused.
It was absolutely horrendous. In fact, I just don't even look back there now because it was a pretty dark time. You know, obviously everything was going fantastic as a family. We were building great relationships with the children and everybody getting to know one another. And, you know, we were very hopeful that the visa would happen. So when it didn't, it was like the bottom just fell out of everything. And I was having flashbacks of the previous years of having to leave Katrina and Keen. Now I was leaving the whole family, again going back to Ireland. But we were trying to, you know, make plans, all the what ifs. And there were so many what ifs. It was very difficult to plan anything with any structure because everything was so uncertain, you know, looking for other work visas, other places that might be sponsoring with a different type of visa, you know, looking down every avenue.
And then what happened?
So then, you know, we were living in Texas and a lot of states then in the United States were allowing same-sex couples to marry. So we decided that we would get married and apply for a green card, as would be the norm for every other binational couple living here in the United States. If they had decided that they were going to commit their lives to one another and they wanted to be married, the process would be to apply for a green card. So Katrina, being a US citizen, was going to sponsor me, her spouse. Now, we knew at that time that same-sex couples were not recognized by the federal government, and the federal government is obviously over the jurisdiction of green cards and visas, etc. But we went ahead with it anyway in the hope that times were changing.
And times were changing. Towards the end of his first term, President Obama declared the Defense of Marriage Act as unconstitutional, and this was the only law that existed in the country that separated a gay couple's rights from a heterosexual couple's rights in relation to immigration laws.
And it meant, you know, putting ourselves out there and being open with everybody, you know, as to our lifestyle, that we would join the course of other binational same-sex couples and fight to get equal rights here and for me to be able to get a green card, which, as you can see, has turned out to be the case.
Cathy and Katrina hope to visit their families in Ireland shortly with the children.
And we've lots of nice texts and emails. One saying, what a beautiful romantic story. I wish that couple every happiness. But we've also got one from an MB in Wexford saying, Miriam, I wish that couple very well, but there's no such thing as same-sex marriage in my book. Call it life commitment or what you will. It's not marriage. What do you say to that?
I would say that if anybody can remember how they felt about committing their life to each other and how they felt at the altar, married couples, then why would they want to deny that to another couple, whether they're the same gender or not. So I would ask them to ask themselves that question. In the United States, and I'm not sure about Ireland, but in the United States, marriage comes with 1,100 laws that we were denied as a same-sex couple because our marriage was not recognized until now. But I would say, apart from the equal rights and the laws, I would ask people, why would they deny somebody the right to publicly commit their lives to somebody they love? I mean, that was a huge step for us, and it was very significant.
From the John Murray Show with Miriam. One of the saddest stories this week was the death of two elderly and vulnerable brothers, Jack and Tom Blaine, who were attacked in their home in New Antrim Street in Castlebar, a few doors up from the Taoiseach's constituency office. When Valerie Cox spoke to neighbours, she found that the two men were clearly loved and protected by the community.
Oh, I knew them well, sure, they were two saints. They'd be afraid to come in, they'd stand, Jackie'd stand there. And I'd say, come in, Jackie, and I'd give him a glass of Guinness, you know. And every place I met him, I'd say, how are you, Jackie? Two saints, they're in heaven.
Yeah, walking saints.
You know, in their minds, kid.
Yeah.
And would they chat to you?
Oh, yes. And I'd say, how are you, Jack?
In his own way, he'd greet you and acknowledge you and all that, yeah.
But he was all profound of cares.
Yeah. If he spotted a new car now, he'd be overlooking at it and he'd bless it and, great for going around blessing buildings and everybody and all that. Like, I mean, total walking saints, the two of them.
Tom would have come in over the years more to the shop, really. They weren't drinkers. Jack would come in between myself and Rocky across the road and he'd get the tea in Rocky's, but I always give him the pint of my waddy with orange and a packet of crisps, and he'd sit at the table here and he'd bother nobody and sit there, and then we'd let him out at the end of the night and make sure he got home across the road. And he'd come into the bar and he'd bless the pitchers and he'd bless everywhere. I used to love to see him coming because, you know, he always blessed everything, you know.
Valerie Cox reporting from Castlebar. Jim Carroll was writing in The Ticket in the Irish Times the other day about Bruce Springsteen and how the old rocker can still sell tickets because he never attempts to appear hip. Well, another rocker who is the real deal was in town this week, Brian Ferry of Roxy Music, who told Miriam O'Callaghan about his working class childhood.
Were your parents a big influence on you?
Oh, yeah, very big. And my whole upbringing was very traditional, solid values, you know. Yeah, my dad was very, very quiet. Very reflective, sort of quiet countryman, really, sitting there in his garden with his chickens and his pigeons, you know, smoking his pipe. It's my memory of him, really. And my mother was very much a town girl, very vivacious, full of life, quite a contrast to my dad. They were together all their life, so it was a good, solid upbringing, really.
And it was his newspaper round which gave him access to all the cool music magazines like Melody Maker and New Musical Express.
I used to deliver all the papers in the morning before I went to school and then the evening when I came back from school. And then at the weekends, I'd sell the football papers as well and go around the pubs and get hopefully big tips from drunken men buying the football special, you know. Used to deliver the magazines as well, like Melody Maker and New Musical Express and all sorts, Jazz Monthly. So I used to read all these things avidly because I was very into music from the age of 10, so.
And he talked about Roxy Music's first big hit.
We were about to play a show in Dortmund, quite a big arena. Very sad news of John Lennon's death, you know, occurred. And we thought, well, let's do one of John Lennon's songs. So we did the Jealous Guy, and the reaction was amazing. When we got back to England, we recorded it and became our biggest ever hit.
I was dreaming of the past. And my heart being fast, I began to lose control. I began to lose control. I didn't mean to hurt you. I'm sorry that I made you cry. I didn't mean to hurt you.
Brian Ferry. Well, goat's meat is big business in Ireland, but what about goat's meat? On Countrywide last week, food writer Suzanne Campbell visited Claudia Marl, who runs Barber Goat Farm in County Westmeath. Claudia showed Suzanne around what must be the goat equivalent of Holles Street Hospital.
Now, I better go in and check if they are closer to kidding.
And this is a sort of maternity unit then, because we've... Yes. How many in here?
It's only the leftover bit from the 280 who kidded already this year. There are six left here.
And the billy?
And the billy. This is more kind of... We've had to find a spot where we can put him, where he can't serve any more goats, so the pregnant ones are a safe place.
Goats have a reputation being terribly intelligent, very friendly. Do you find that?
Yes, they are definitely more intelligent than sheep. If you put goat and sheep on the same field, the goat would take the leadership. And they will find every possibility to climb out, nibble your clothes or whatever. They are very inquisitive animals.
Inquisitive and delicious. Claudia farms her goats not only for their milk, but also for their meat. And the market is small, but the meat is growing in popularity in the restaurants that serve it. But Claudia's decision to produce the goat meat in the first place is really unusual, as Suzanne found out.
Traditionally, what happened, and for you, early on, what did you do with the male kids? Because obviously the females are kept as replacements.
And the males are just put down after they are born. And that's kind of common practice, I think, all over Europe.
Why did you decide to start keeping them?
I just was fed up with killing the animals. It's just not a nice thing to do in the first place.
Does it give you pleasure keeping them on?
No, I sometimes think I'm completely stupid to do and I would say most other goat farmers think, yes, she's... The market can't develop if there is not the product on offer. So if there is a product, the market will develop, but it's a slow process.
Westmeath goat farmer Claudia Marl talking to Suzanne Campbell on Countrywide, produced by Sinead Egan. Well, the American humorist David Sedaris is always on the lookout for inspirational material. He was Sean Rock's guest on Thursday night's Arena.
I wrote a story years ago. I was on the metro in Paris and there was an American guy behind me who was watching me. And I think I looked at somebody's handbag or something. I was probably looked at it thinking, God, oh, that's an ugly handbag. And he said, that guy's a thief, that guy right there. He's talking about me. And he's speaking in English to this friend that he's with. That guy right there, he's a pickpocket. You know, and so he was saying all these things about me, thinking I was French and that I didn't understand what he was talking about. And many people have asked me, why didn't you say something? And it's because I didn't want the story to end. Like, I didn't want to do anything that would stop. I mean, the story was writing itself right before my eyes.
David Sedaris with Sean Rocks. Well, on The Business last Saturday, George Lee spoke with Christoph Müller, the high-flying German who's been at the head of Aer Lingus since he joined during its lowest ebb 4 years ago. He spoke about turning the company's fortunes around and the competition that airline faces from its rival and shareholder, Ryanair.
No, we have different markets, we have different targets, we have different shareholders to a large degree, and we have first and foremost different employees. We want to achieve really a win-win situation such where our shareholders, our employees and our customers are satisfied at the same point in time. Nobody will dispute that Ryanair shareholders are very, very satisfied, but are the employees and the customers on the same engagement and satisfaction level like we are? We simply have a different idea of doing business. We are in for the long haul, and we have different opinions about the sustainability of certain things, be it public relation, be it leadership, be it treatment of the customers. All that is different in Aer Lingus.
Christoph Müller with George Lee, and George will be with you shortly just after the 10 o'clock news. But I leave you now with a song from Glenn Hansard. It's his new single and it's called The Gift, and he played it live yesterday on the John Murray Show with Miriam, and you can see him live at the festival Big Top in Galway on the 25th. Gurmahag vasra goluder, tasulam gurwanship saltasaglor, agus gemeshivlam, takanamakena on chachtan shahugin, gijishin, gijiship slan.
Thank you. gift will last forever. This gift will never let you down. Some things are made from better stuff. This gift is waiting to be found. Your heart's in wide receiving. Been too long buried in the sand. Some things require believing. These things just fall right in your hand. Just try to understand. If you long enough and you don't give up, if you're no harbor to the sorrow. Oh, just let it go. Up your arms and let it in. This gift will last forever. This gift will never let you down. Some things are made from better stuff. This gift is waiting to be found. Just you believe it now. If you
broke the string at the end of the song.